Movers, shakers, makers. What makes creative people tick, and how do they find and develop their inspiration? Welcome to the podcast that draws back the curtain on the inventive mind and its artistic process. I'm Emma Lister. Today, I talk to dancer and choreographer Sita Patel. Born in London, raised in Bristol, she specializes in the Indian classical dance form Bharatanatyam, a discipline for which she is a prolific advocate. As a choreographer, she has presented works at the Royal Opera House, the South Bank, Edinburgh Festival Fringe, as well as the Adelaide Fringe, where her one-woman show, co-directed by Lina Limosani, Not Today's Yesterday, won the Best Dance Award. Her most recent and most ambitious work, a Bharatanatyam version of The Rite of Spring, premiered in 2019 and should have been touring now were it not for the COVID-19 pandemic. She's now working towards a full-scale version with live orchestra. We spoke 2 days after news broke of George Floyd's murder. We are in the week where George Floyd was murdered in Minneapolis, and I think I'd like your opinion as an artist who tackles difficult subject matter, like when you confront Orientalism, colonialism, the whitewashing of history in Not Today's Yesterday. I want to know your opinion on how artists can best tackle issues like this, because it's easy to feel helpless. Is it our duty to put it into our work? Or should we just be confronting it with voting ballots and with our voices? Should we tackle it in our work?
This is a really big question. I definitely, every time something like this happens, I just feel broken. I feel very porous. And my first inclination is just to sign every single petition and share every post just so I don't feel so useless. And I know that it doesn't really change that much. I feel like as an artist, I don't want to be someone that thinks artists have to do something in particular. It's not always someone's calling to make political work. And the beauty of art is that you can make it about whatever you want to make it about. But for me, I know that I can't be apolitical. It's not possible for me to wake up in the country that I live in, the country that I was born in, with the skin color that I have and the background that I have. It's impossible to be apolitical. Even if I make a work that's not about any sort of politics at all, on the surface, for example, something like The Rite of Spring, which is about wonderful music and dance coming together, it is political. It's inherently political because you don't get to see works by people like me with a dance form that's not from this part of the world being seen on big stages very often, if at all, sometimes in some places. But in terms of actually making a politically motivated work, like Not Today's Yesterday, as you mentioned, I can't speak for other people, but I know that that process of making that work was, and performing it more than making it, performing it was deeply profound. And when I see the people's reactions, especially people of colour, people that have stories themselves that they identify with when they see the story that I'm presenting on stage, I've had people come up to me in tears talking about the fact that some of the imagery in the work is, it just puts into something tangible, something that they haven't been able to articulate with words or themselves to other people. But ultimately, I think we must be aware of what's going on in the world and not stuck in our bubbles as artists, which is very easy for that to happen. I, for one, acknowledge my privilege on all levels in certain situations, in all situations if I can. I try and remain really self-aware because I know as much as I'm a woman of colour that, and I will have aspects of my life that where I'm not, not able to flourish, or there is a glass ceiling, or there are, very subconscious biases happening to stop me from succeeding. I know that I'm not going to be held by brute force by a police officer like a black man would, especially with someone in America at this time. And that's not to say Britain's not culpable. It has its own terrible institutional racism problems. Everywhere in the world does, I think. And it manifests in different ways, whether it's about race, whether it's about class, social hierarchy, sexism, all of those things. But I think I need to, for my own well-being, to stay connected to even the difficult things and not lose myself in art, which can sometimes be about beauty and only about beauty. And I just don't feel like I'm a whole person if I don't keep myself in a place where I understand and can empathize with things that I am privileged with and others aren't.
Let's talk about your upbringing in the UK and how you found dance. Were you as likely to have taken ballet and tap as Bharatanatyam?
No, not really. I mean, I'm not from a family that comes with a background in any sort of arts. My family is historically known to be business people, entrepreneurs, that kind of thing. So there's creativity in there, but not specifically in the arts. My sister, 5 years my senior, is trained as a fine artist, a painter in mixed medium. But actually, she was the black sheep, and I sort of followed on, I guess, after her, but no one else in the family. So it was really unlikely that I would have landed in dance. It was very happenstance.
What was the happenstance?
That so in Bristol in the late 80s, when I first moved there, the mid 80s, I moved there, and by the late 80s, we had sort of, formed in Bristol a small Indian community. There was a temple that many of the families would frequent for the various festivals and things. My parents were a big part of that, and I basically grew up doing things at the temple in terms of my personal life, not my school life. And there was a lady there who set up a Saturday school, who that was offering learning various different South Asian languages: Urdu, Bengali, Hindi, Gujarati. There was sports like cricket, and they had dance, Bharatanatyam. And so my parents said, did I want to go to the Saturday school? And what did I want to learn? This is what they had if I did want to go. And so I said, okay, well, I'll try dance. I wasn't particularly into anything like that at school or like I said, in any other way. But it sounded nice. And so I sort of pootled along, and it started from there, and I loved it.
And was there a moment when you decided, or when you knew that it was going to be a career, or did you sort of slide into a career of it?
It was never on the cards as a career. It was just not that gen I wasn't part of a generation where that was normal in Indian culture to even think about going into the arts, let alone when you're in a place that isn't kind of and in a family that isn't just about that it's something very much on the periphery. It's very much in the hobby place, and that too, not even excelling at it, because it's not like doing it as a sort of rite of passage and then you can give up, but you're really good at it. It was really just something for fun, and it wasn't until I was about 14, 12 to 14, that I started to get more serious and take private classes with my teacher. And then she invited me to do a small tour with her around Wales, and that's when I got a taste of what it was like to, I didn't even know what professional dancer meant, if I'm honest. I just knew I loved doing it and I wanted to do it as much as I could. But I went to normal university. I studied pharmacy. I hated it. I changed to medicine. I really liked it. And then I got offered a job in a dance company partway through my medical degree. And I was like, okay, let me take a sabbatical and see. And then I just knew.
It felt right.
Yeah, it did.
So it surprises me that you have no, like formally structured theatrical training, because several of your shows, there is text, whether it's recorded or spoken on stage, and you do it so well. I would have presumed that you had learned it or studied it, but it seems like perhaps you honed it over time. How have you brought text into your work?
I can definitely say that it was from when I worked with Deviate Physical Theatre, because I was in that company for 14 months, and it was all text. It was verbatim. We had to memorize our monologues and do movement with it on top of that. So it not only needed to have a role and a character that was authentic because we were talking about real people's lives, it also had to have a lot of control in terms of breath and delivery because you're also moving. So it definitely, my interest peaked in it then, and I was just interested after that to see how I can use it. It's another sort of tool in my kit that I just really enjoyed using.
What was the name of that show?
Can we talk about this?
That must have been quite a baptism by fire if you're entering a company quite young and they say, by the way, it's all text.
Well, it was young for me in my professional career, but it isn't young in terms of a normal person's dance career. I joined the company when I was 20, when I was 30, 30 to 31, and but I had heard about Lloyd's work and I was scared, but I think that was the right point in my career to do it because my own work hadn't sort of taken off quite like this. It was just about to. I'd just done my first solo classical tour and it had done well. And, I'd been invited to the Edinburgh Fringe, which I had to cancel because I got offered this job with Lloyd. And I just decided, you know what, I'm just going to put everything else aside and I'm going to throw myself into it. And actually, my role in the company wasn't big at all. It wasn't just me. A lot of the female roles weren't that big. That's not how his work was sort of weighted. But I kind of reconciled that. I don't know if I necessarily felt as utilized as I would have liked, but I think I was more than able to put my ego aside in that because I think the working environment with the other dancers and being around that level of quality was a learning experience. And I just said, okay, fine, I'm going to learn all of my understudy roles. I'm going to learn everything I can in this time. And even if I'm only on stage for like 10 minutes, I'm gonna show my worth. And I think I really did. That's how I felt when Lloyd talked to me about things, and I genuinely felt I proved myself to him and and others.
And if that was your first foray into, let's call it physical theater, I think might
Yeah.
be a good term for Deviate. And you say that's when you started to bring it into your own work more. How would you define what you do now? Let's talk about your Rite of Spring. Is it a Bharatanatyam piece? Is it a dance piece? Do you try not to categorize it?
It's definitely a dance piece. There's no text in it. It's Bharatanatyam in as much as that's the vocabulary I've chosen to use and not deviate from. It doesn't fall into what traditional Bharatanatyam repertoire is by any means, and also it can't because it's also not to that music that you would normally hear it with. It has a narrative because I chose to follow the narrative and develop it in my own way from the original score. But again, it's using the tools of Bharatanatyam's kind of expressional side, but not necessarily through the face, which is how it normally works, but through the relationships of the bodies together. But I really did want to stay within the form. And I think purists in Bharatanatyam would say maybe I haven't. But I know that I have, and the way that I guess I delineate it if I have to in myself is that this, the Rite of Spring, the way that I've made it could not be danced by someone that hasn't got a lot of Bharatanatyam training. It's not something that a really good contemporary dancer could mimic. You have to be trained in Bharatanatyam well to be able to do that work.
Is it one of the first pieces of yours that you are not personally in? And if so, what are the challenges of being on the outside versus being on the inside?
I have made some other works where I'm not in them, and I love doing that because I think it doesn't spread me so thin. And I'm more interested in being able to see what I'm creating. I think I haven't created work on myself alone. I've only created work with me and other people in a group so that I can step out sometimes and still see what's going on. But that's often been in the past because of resource more than anything else. It's not an ideal situation for me personally. But I love performing, and I think I still have something to offer as a performer, which is why when I when I produced Not Today's Yesterday, and I brought the idea to Lena, I did want to work with someone who was going to make that work on me, but with my thinking involved in it. And it's always going to really be like that with me, unless I'm working with someone who's making a Bharatanatyam piece, because anything other than that, unless the dancer has exactly the same skill set as me, they're going to need my input. I want to do something, I want to do something that I can offer from my background, even if it's not pure Bharatanatyam, because I think the skills of Bharatanatyam are so rich, the dexterity, the detailing, the focus, the narrative telling of stories, and there's so much in there. You don't have to use it as Bharatanatyam, but you do need to know how to bring it out of someone.
All those rich elements in Bharatanatyam, did you easily see them fit into Rite of Spring? I just wonder why you decided to tackle this really famous piece, which is a famous piece of music, I think. There's not a definitive version dance-wise, really. There's sort of the original, which I think was remounted by Joffrey. There's a lot of famous versions, and there's a lot of versions that have been lost in the traces of time, but a lot of choreographers do put their stamp on it, and I wondered if that's something you had always had ambition to do, or it was brewing, or how it came about that you decided to put the two together.
It's funny. I think the first time I ever heard it probably was in Fantasia by Disney. And I didn't even know what it was because I didn't have that in my upbringing. I didn't listen to classical music growing up. I didn't watch ballet or anything. And so it wasn't something I'd always dreamt of doing. These things of watching contemporary dance and listening to Western classical music came much later in my life as an artist, way later than when I started dance, because my dance life was only about Bharatanatyam in a very specific way. And I wasn't really opened up to those other things till much later. So I can't honestly say that it was this lifelong dream. But I think when I wanted to finally explore group Bharatanatyam, so Bharatanatyam is normally seen as a solo art form. When I started seeing group things, and I was like, do I like it? There's something lost in it that I miss when I see a solo artist performing. And I thought, well, why not try and make ensemble work with Bharatanatyam and see how I feel about it then? And so it was really genuinely an experiment. And I thought, well, if I'm going to experiment, I'd like to learn from things that have been reimagined a lot in the groups. And that doesn't happen in Bharatanatyam. So there wasn't something I could really just see in that context and learn from in that way and interpret something from the Bharatanatyam canon in that way. So it made sense for me to go into a dance world where it was genuinely ensemble work, so not always just lots of people doing unison or that kind of thing, but it was a genuine understanding of what an ensemble can do. And that just led me, I think, naturally to some of the ensemble works within the Western contemporary and ballet canons. And I think it would have been very strange for me to not look at something like The Rite of Spring. And the one that pops up into my mind after the original is Pina Bausch's Rite of Spring, which has so many people in it, and you can really see what a lot of bodies in space can do. And I knew I wouldn't have that many bodies in the space, but I guess it was a starting point. And I genuinely didn't know if the idea would have legs, and it really did. And I just listened to that, and listened to the fact that when I did a part of it, it did make sense to make all of it.
Putting together a few things you've said about it, going back to you speaking about how there's when you're on stage, it is inherently political, you feel, and the place of Rite of Spring in the Western canon of music, you know, the sort of mythic status, as well as you mentioned, perhaps the South Asian dance community might not always get what you're doing. I wonder if you feel like you're kind of tackling three things at once: the sort of music, but also the status of the music, as well as how it might be received by your dance community. Were you nervous about any of those things?
I'm always nervous about most things. And I think I have to spend quite a bit of time before I just get into the studio to sort of block it out. Otherwise, I genuinely think I wouldn't do it. And there are things that I haven't done as a dancer and as a creator because I've been too scared, because I hear these small voices telling me that I'm either not good enough or that I'd be too audacious to touch this composition or that composition. But I definitely think in the last few years, I really feel, well, that may be the case that I am being audacious, but I'm not a bad person, and I work hard to make sure I'm equipped to do the best that I can at that point in time. And that's the best that I can do for anybody at this point, including myself. There's always more to know.
I think artists often feel like the fraud police are going to come at any moment and drag them away and say, you don't actually know what you're doing. But the truth is, I think they don't actually know what they're doing because they haven't started yet.
I
If you
mean,
know what I mean.
I do, and where I feel, what I feel is interesting for me as well when I think about this is that yes, the music is really iconic. It isn't iconic in the Eastern classical. Like nobody, none of the dancers I brought in initially had ever heard the music before. So it is very much a Western thing. We can't assume that it's in everybody's lives because it isn't. And in the same way, there are iconic Indian classical pieces that half the world, more than half the world, will never have heard of. And there'll be Indian dancers thinking, what? You've never heard of that? Or you've never heard of that person? Where have you been? And so I need to make sure that I'm constantly reminding myself, actually, no, it's perfectly reasonable for someone to be highly intelligent, artistic, creative, and not have heard of that piece of music because it is about geography and it's about history, that different places have different histories. And I'm in the middle of both. So yes, I'd heard of it, but a lot of the dancers I worked with initially hadn't. It was insane to them to hear this music. It made no sense whatsoever. But then we deciphered it and we found a mutual language to talk about the music. And it really became something extremely mind-blowing to them as well. And that was brilliant to experience that. But I do think that I feel less resistance to making the work in terms of the Western world. Yes, I think there have been some comments that, normally older choreographers do it or they do it later in their careers or, that was brave. I don't know if that's a euphemism for saying, well, you're very stupid to have made that work at this point. I don't know. I'm not going to think too deeply into it, but no one has outright made me feel like I can't touch it for whatever reason. But it's funny because comparatively, in the Indian classical world, I am absolutely petrified of choreographing within the Indian classical repertoire tradition. Because every composition is seeped in politics and history and who composed it originally and how do you credit them and how do you change them? Is there an audacity to changing something? I have to talk to the Boosey and Hawkes people, who are the rights owners, music rights owners of the Rite of Spring of Stravinsky's estate, I think. I'm not sure about if it's the whole estate, but it's definitely the Rite of Spring. If I wanted to split the music or change it in any way by adding an interlude or doing anything like that, it's a negotiation. But if I was to do that in the Indian classical tradition, I mean, there's the possibility of all hell breaking loose. And so it makes me very nervous, and I think it makes other artists nervous. But again, I still have to stand by the fact that some creative autonomy has to be within there. As long as you're respectful, I genuinely can't say I can champion something that just stifles creativity.
When I first attended a rehearsal, I think the first thing I saw was the Adoration of the Earth section, which is quite a famous section. The footwork was really complementing the rhythm of the music, and I wondered if how you explored that, if you tried to work with Stravinsky's rhythm or counter it or play with it, or were you using a traditional rhythm from Bharatanatyam?
So there is no specific traditional rhythm. There's ways and patterns of counting more than anything, which there's just no way that you can just pick up something that exists as a phrase of rhythm and plonk it onto Stravinsky. Like you have to follow his music. Sometimes it's very exciting just to go with the accents where they're being put, and other times to highlight where the threes are or where the fours are, and whatever it might be surfacing and bubbling underneath the big sounds. I started off very naively, I think, because I didn't do the work on the score and the initial development in 2017. I kind of went in there and all of us together listened and tried to just make a pattern where patterns didn't initially seem to exist. So we just putting the counts wherever we heard them make sense to us for accents. And then by the third year of development into the final stage of creation, I made sure that before I even saw a single dancer, that I had spent all the time I needed to map out the entire score, so I could literally recite to them the counts with the score. And that gave me a really clear picture, and it then gave them a really clear picture of and confidence. Yes, it was a lot of counting, but that counting dissipated to become just about hearing the music more naturally and understanding what was coming next.
There's a surprising and really beautiful interlude in the piece where one of your dancers, Suraj Subramaniam, he lies on the ground and the others blow powder onto him in what seems a kind of ritual. And we leave the Stravinsky score and instead we have vocals by an artist named Rupa. It's a really surprising break from the intensity of the last section. And I was wondering whether your intention was to change the mood or to bring some South Asian influence to the piece, or in fact, to interrupt the Stravinsky.
It definitely wasn't to do anything specifically to cause, specifically to make a difference for the sake of being different. It was nothing about that. It felt to me that partly because at the end of the first half of The Rite of Spring and knowing what comes in the second half, I knew the kind of images I wanted, and so I felt actually I could create a sort of fake second half for a little while, taking us into another possible world before we come back to the reality of Stravinsky. So almost that Stravinsky was the real dark journey for this chosen one that was full of fear and doubt and duty to and burden and those things that the music felt to me in the second half drives towards. It's much more serious, it's darker, it's more narrative driven. I just wanted that moment to think, well, what could that reality be like? What would this chosen one love? It's almost like thinking when you're a child, you want to be a bride. Let's say someone's a little girl already knows she plays dress up as a bride when she's young. She doesn't necessarily know what that might mean. It's just that you see brides being beautifully dressed and showered all this attention. So there's this image of what your duty could be. But then, for example, in Indian culture for many years and even to this day, arranged marriages are the way that things are conducted, and that can be not out of choice of two people getting together. So there's a darkness in there. There's a lack of autonomy. There's the duty to the family and those sorts of pressures on you. And so I kind of wanted to have this idea where the chosen one thought that their future as the chosen one was going to be full of these beautiful things of being looked after and being touched gently, being adorned with all this beauty. Whereas really what was going to happen was much more, there was much more gravitas in the reality of it.
You talked about seeing images of things, or you described some feelings that you wanted to give the audience. Is that a starting point for you often when you're making a new piece? So not that you would think, oh, it would be great to get some of these steps in here. Do you see an image and then you work towards that with the choreography?
Interestingly, I think for The Rite of Spring, the first half and the second half feel quite different to me. And the first half really felt about joyous dancing. It felt like birds, flocks of birds moving in the sky and all changing direction together. And there was this sort of like game-like feeling almost bursting with surprises and playfulness. So it lent itself to me to pure dance, to dance that doesn't have a narrative, but is the energy that gives it this sort of playfulness. Whereas the second half was much more driven by narrative, and I think my inclination for creating the second half the way that I did was very image driven, because I knew that it was going to revolve around this piece of costume that was going to be quite intrusive in the space, and quite a big thing, big statement to put into the space with the dancers. And so leading up to that point needed to make sense. And so that was image driven for sure, because I know I wanted the sort of final image to be, and I needed to work out how we were going to get there in the time that we had with the sections of music that we had and the journey that with the music was taking.
Was there a piece that changed everything for you? A piece of art, a piece of writing, a piece of music, a piece of dance?
I love the music of Philip Glass, which as many, many people do. But I'm sort of obsessed with Metamorphosis, the album, and the entire album is variations on one theme. In fact, sometimes you listen and think, did I just listen to this track already? Or you don't know when it's looped back to the beginning, but there's just something I think that suits me in that cyclical place where I can just get lost.
He's an amazing artist, because he's really someone who seems to inspire a lot of artists and inspire a lot of artists to make art. And he's also very popular as well. He's hits that sweet spot, doesn't he? And was there a piece that you learned from that? I'm trying to frame it better for people. Perhaps it was a noble failure. Perhaps it was a piece you were in that you hated, but you learned something from. Maybe it was an exhibit that you went to, and at the time you would have given it 3 out of 5 stars, but in retrospect, 5 years later, you're still thinking about it.
I mean, I don't know if there's a difference between what you're suggesting in the question and just a guilty pleasure.
Give us a guilty pleasure, Sita.
My guilty pleasures are Strictly Come Dancing.
Okay.
Even though I don't have TV and I have to go and watch it at my sister's house, there was a time when I was really, really into it, and I'm absolutely the biggest fangirl of Flavia Cacaccia. And I don't care how cheesy it is or how showy it is or anything. Those dancers know what they're doing. But there's some, I just like that they're just all in, aren't they? They're all in. No, I tend to like things that just give me respite, because my brain is constantly on otherwise, and I have to do things that really switch it off. And if that means trashy novels or TV or whatever that might be, I've stopped giving myself a hard time for needing those things.
Is there another artist you'd like to nominate for us to check out or learn more about?
So I've nominated a wonderful actress. Her name is Rhoda Afuriata. And actually, we started off life both at pharmacy school. And we both saw the light, and I became a dancer and she became an actress. She's gone through some really interesting experiences, and she's part of a program set up by BAFTA for underrepresented actors. And I think that she'll be someone really interesting to talk to in terms of what she's participated in, as well as I guess the issues she comes up with, and I think voices like hers need to be heard.
When I began this fledgling podcast, I was aware that the people I'd be talking to would be from my own small circles. The best way, I thought, to break out of those circles would be to have my artist interviewees occasionally nominate people they could put me in touch with, creating a link in a chain of artist chats. I'm happy to say that actor Rhoda Afuriata, Sita's nominated artist, is the first link in that chain. We'll be speaking to her later in this season. For more information about Sita and her choreography, visit her website, www.sitapatel.co.uk, or on Twitter, @sitadances. Okay, closing credits. This has been a Makeshift Company production. Follow us on Instagram @makeshiftcompany, or check out our website, makeshiftcompany.com, where there is a link to the podcast website for show notes. Please subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. Also, if you rate and review the show, it would be most appreciated. Thanks for listening. And now, from the cutting room floor, I give you...
And I'll count myself as like the edge of a millennial. Just about millennial, not sure.